everybody. Welcome to another installment of Innovation Crush. There is no echo anymore. Robert Donez Jr. has left the building. You didn't even know there was a Robert Donez Jr. that existed, did you?
I didn't.
And that lovely voice you just heard is a guy by the name of Jamin Shively. Say hello, Jamin.
Hello. Hello, everyone.
It's an interesting name, Jamin.
Yes.
Where does it come from?
So, my father wanted me to be named after my great-grandfather, Diego Pellicer. And Diego, in English, is James. So my dad said, let's name him James. My mom didn't like the S at the end of James, so they played around with different letters to substitute and came up with Jamin.
No, wait, what's Jaime? What is that name? Because I would have never thought Diego translates to Jamin or
yeah.
James.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, Jaime would be Jamie.
Well, okay. All right. Well, it shows what I know. So anyway, this is Innovation Crush. For those of you also out there who don't know, where we kind of take a look and a gander into the worlds of some of the best innovators that we can find behind some of the greatest projects we can find in the world. So, Jamin, you've been very, very busy.
Yes.
I came to know you from a feat I thought was pretty incredible by building a brand from scratch with no product.
Yeah, exactly.
And the number one of the if not the only brand, right? Can you just talk about that process a little bit of building?
Absolutely. So I was, first of all, just a little background. So I was corporate strategy manager at Microsoft, where my expertise is the analysis and actual creation of completely new categories of products and services.
Oh, wow.
And so at Microsoft, I was focused on, high-tech categories.
Where in the hierarchy of the organization is this?
So this falls under the vice president of corporate strategy who reports directly to the CEO.
Got it.
Yeah.
All right. So give us an example of some of the Shively products that we may be happy with or very angry with.
Well, I can't tell you about the ones that you'd be angry with, or I choose not to. But what I can talk about is one project that didn't get off the ground, and it's kind of a very interesting story about how innovation happens and often doesn't happen inside big corporations. But to leapfrog Google over the kind of general consumer search space that they dominate so thoroughly into business to business,
right?
Completely different realm. So I created a whole strategy for that and a prototype for it and a go-to-market strategy, and I interviewed business owners of various different types in various different countries and came up with a whole new platform. And what's interesting is, so the general search market is taking a larger and larger slice out of the advertising pie.
Right.
And that's about a $750 billion per year pie worldwide. Now, business-to-business sales and marketing spend is in the trillions of dollars, with a T.
Wow.
It's a much, much bigger pie, and no one is dominating it, right, in terms of an online marketplace, a business-to-business online marketplace. So I created this whole platform for it to leapfrog Google, but instead, Microsoft went head-to-head against Google with tiny little Bing, right?
And Bing, which is tiny as denoted by the name.
Exactly, right. Eeny, weeny. Anyway, and it was, and I could see that Bing would be a total disaster. And so before Bing was launched in the, couple years prior to that, I was lobbying everyone I could within the company, Steve Ballmer, Bill Gates, most of the senior vice presidents, and pretty much all the vice presidents within online services. And I was trying to educate them on the fundamental laws of marketing. And it's fascinating. Marketing can be an amazingly powerful tool, as you well know, as long as you, follow there are laws of marketing just like there are laws of physics. And but most people don't know that. And
that's
so
very true.
They think, oh, man, if I'm just creative and, whatnot.
Ooh, if I build something really cool, people will come.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so this kind of dearth of expertise in marketing. Microsoft's, run mainly by engineers and, MBA folks who haven't necessarily learned the laws of marketing because they don't teach it in most MBA programs. It's something much more sophisticated, but absolutely necessary. And so here I was on this just campaign, to demonstrate, because you can essentially mathematically demonstrate it, the equivalent of mathematical demonstration.
Especially to an engineer, like that would be the best, you would assume.
Exactly, exactly. So I was like buying, you know, marketing books and giving them to these other executives within the company to educate them on the fundamentals. And I mean, that's how far we had gone off track. And so, but no, we as a company plunged headlong into disaster with Bing, and it's lost more money than any other enterprise in the history of the internet.
So surprisingly, you didn't leave Microsoft to start this platform that you're talking about.
No. Well, actually, I did. I left it to start it in the specialty foods industry, because what it constitutes is industry-specific business-to-business online marketplaces.
Right.
And so what I was promoting within Microsoft was we do this for all industries, a different marketplace for each industry.
Got it.
But collectively span all the industries that constitute the global economy.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's where you're going after that multi-trillion dollar.
No, but that's also where people go like, huh? Like, you know, I'm sure, is that kind of where you feel like the battle was lost? Like, I feel like sometimes when you go specialty foods, this is how it's going to, you know, go. Yeah. And you break down that, you know, that one example. And then you go, and we can do it in these other three or four. Like,
right.
Did you go in like lofty? Like,
No.
Okay. Okay.
When an ultra focused with a specialty food brand, you know, focused on that sector. And then just went after the manufacturers. And then you have the chicken and egg problem of how do you build up both an audience of the manufacturers who are selling products in that industry and the buyers, the business-to-business buyers, the buyers who buy for supermarket chains and, you know, mom-and-pop stores and whatnot.
That's amazing. What does lobbying look like inside an organization like that for you? Is it like meeting after meeting? Like, are you supporting facts? Like, what was your personal strategy in that situation?
Yeah. My personal strategy was to appeal to reason and to what's in the best interest of the company.
Right.
And the biggest resistance that I ran into is, oh, well, that's a brilliant idea, but you know what? It's contrary to the goals of this, you know, senior vice president.
Right.
Well, if it's contrary to the goals of the senior vice president, but the proposal is correct, right, by a wide margin,
sure,
then the goals of the senior vice president need to change. So let me go talk to him. And so I would just go up the chain until ultimately I was told, no, the decision has come down from the top. We're going in this direction.
No.
No.
Did you have to go to like some ominous room where there was just a throne and a light where you couldn't see who was up there?
Oh, exactly. I couldn't see. Yeah. And it was like, yeah.
I have come with my proposal. Who? It's like going to see Oz.
Yeah, exactly. So basically, having gotten the innovation beaten out of me at Microsoft, then in 2012, I'm looking at the cannabis, the legalization of cannabis, the fact that it's happening. And at that time, I had done cannabis.
Which also relates directly to specialty foods for some people.
Absolutely. A direct link. It is a specialty food, or a specialty food ingredient, or it should be. Anyway.
Right.
So in 2012, looking at this legalization process happening, let me just make an analogy for you. This is a great kind of market. I have all these little marketing stories.
This is the perfect platform for you then.
Okay. Well,
market away.
Okay, awesome. So this is story time. It's as if, imagine it's like, you know, 1890, right?
I'm black. That's a bad time for us.
I'm sorry. All right. imagine that it's 2012.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
No, imagine it's 2008 and cola soft drinks are illegal. Just historically, they'd been illegal for the last 200 years. Why? Well, because they've got sugar and corn syrup and caffeine and carbonation and it's bad for the stomach. And okay, whatever. All right, so it's illegal. But you know what? Everyone's drinking it. And people are brewing it in their basement and then they're, you know, they're giving it away to neighbors. They're selling, you know, some people are, oh, they're selling it. Oh, they're trafficking in cola soft drinks. Ooh, right? But, and in all this activity and all these, you know, tens of billions of dollars or hundreds of billions of dollars globally in spend on cannabis and consumption of cannabis, there was not a single established brand. Now, why was there not a brand? Well, because it was illegal. Duh. It's not like anyone wants to put a big sign out right. in front of their house. Hey, I'm growing this great, you know, Jamin branded weed.
Yes. Or the branding was limited, right? I think the branding was sort of limited to the nickname of a particular product or where it came from or well, certain things like that.
Actually, you're talking about a different thing. You're talking about the names of certain strains or varieties.
Sure.
But those aren't exactly brands. They're strains because, you know, like OG Kush or something like that. I mean, there's, you know, hundreds of growers. Thousands who grow OG Kush. Right.
Yep.
So it's close, but it's not exactly a brand.
Got it.
But a lot of people think that those are brands. Anyway, bottom line, the industry was nowhere in terms of branding. There wasn't a single established brand, you know, that anyone could recognize.
Yeah, of course.
At a national level. So back to the cola analogy. In that context, then suddenly people are talking about, you know, legalizing cola soft drinks. Ooh, well, my goodness, a Coca-Cola brand is going to emerge. A Pepsi Cola brand. Is going to emerge.
Right.
And then a whole bunch of also-rans are also going to emerge, and most of them are going to die, and some of them are going to try to hang in there like RC Cola, and you know.
I was going to say RC Cola.
No. And then new specialty colas are constantly popping up,
sure.
You know, like Jones Soda and, you know, all these locally, you know, small batch brewed, handcrafted, whatever.
Yep.
You know, but bottom line, so I looked at this opportunity where there's, I knew there was going to be a number one brand and it would be worth tens of billions of dollars. And I thought, why not create it? And with the legacy that I have, that I, as I mentioned earlier, I set about creating the number one brand of cannabis. And it was all done through PR, through the media.
Wow.
Because, you know, if you try to do it through advertising, first of all, that would be illegal. And second of all, it's nowhere near as effective. If I advertise, hey, Chris, hey, I've got the best, you know, bleach ever. You've got automatic, you know, resistance.
Right.
Antibodies to that kind of, you know, message. But if, like, you're watching the news and, oh, that's a really interesting story, then, you know, your mind is open. And
right.
You listen. Oh, they're pioneering premium cannabis. Oh, you know, you're very receptive. And what a fascinating story. It's this ex-Microsoft guy and blah, 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 and, you know, corporate
yeah.
strategy and all. You know, and it's being applied to cannabis. And so in that way, we became the number one brand. And you can Google brand of marijuana and see what comes up. I Googled it last night, and both the number one and the number two hits were about the brand that we built.
Now, I'm always curious as to, like, what the hurdles are, right? Because when you're in the process of legalizing, right, it's not 100%
yeah.
legal. You have, obviously, geographic constraints. But then, you know, the voyeuristic side of me is like, well, what about the people who aren't doing it legally, and how do they feel about that kind of effort?
Oh, yeah. No. A lot of them were very, very offended. And
to put it lightly? Or
oh, sure. Yeah. But it was because they didn't know who I was or what I stood for. They were just going off of what the media was spouting out.
Right.
Right. And one of the things I love about your format of your show, Chris, is that we can actually get into the depths of some really interesting.
Oh, we go deep.
We go deep. So going deep, what they didn't know is that the reason that I went into this in the first place was prior to this, I was in, you know, 2011, 2012, I was working on developing a software platform and some artificial intelligence technology, perfecting some that I had deployed successfully elsewhere,
right.
For creating a model to optimize, to model and optimize food production and food distribution worldwide across all major,
right.
you know, categories of food products and, you know, including livestock and dairy and processed foods and, you know, cornmeal and things like that. With what objectives? With the objectives of ensuring that all the world's people are adequately nourished and that the production and distribution of food globally is done in a sustainable way.
Right.
In a way that actually reverses global warming. And we can talk more about that on this program or at a later time, but that's a very deep topic. And so I was working on this model, and I figured out that I would probably need to spend about $5 to $10 billion per year in order to end world hunger, because it's a process of, you know, there are relief efforts that
sure.
need to be done simultaneous with longer-term infrastructure development projects, simultaneous with PR and marketing.
Oh, yeah. It's not a – I mean, that's historically been the problem is the Band-Aids, right, like dropping the bags of rice.
Exactly.
Does no one any good in the long term.
Exactly. So here we're talking about essentially optimizing the world's food production and distribution, both – for humanitarian reasons, for climate change, for reversing global warming, for the
sure.
long-term sustainability just of life on planet Earth or life anywhere resembling what we know it currently, Also for managing the world's natural resources responsibly, including water, topsoil, phosphate fertilizers, of which are a limited resource, just sure. like oil. Oil, you know. And also addressing other global issues such as war, financial crises, et cetera. So a global model, I mean, eventually it would get more and more sophisticated sure. over time. It would start off focusing on the food part of the economy and over time expand to other sectors of the economy. Because right now we're essentially on a collision course with disaster.
Yeah.
And, you know, reasonable people who are educated and following the science can attest that that's the case. But we're not doing anything about it. We're sure. not doing anything. I mean, you know, you've got things like the Kyoto Treaty, but, you know, people, you know, it, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, well, like going back to, like, I don't know, with the idea, you've painted this broad global, you know, spectrum of a picture
yeah.
of what you look to accomplish, and then on the streets, right? You've got Joe Schmo who doesn't like what you're doing. If they don't know you, are you bringing them into the movement that you're creating? Like
absolutely, okay, absolutely, yeah. And later we'll talk about the eco platform.
Yeah, I would love to.
Yeah, that we're launching.
Why not later? Why let's do it now?
Great. Let's do it now. So to round out the last story, so that's what I was working on
sure.
prior to starting the Cannabis Project, and realizing how much money I would need. Or we would need, whatever the organization yeah. that we would create to do this. And then seeing the cannabis opportunity, where you've got an opportunity to create tens of billions of dollars in market value, right? That's and essentially crazy. One fell, you know, stroke, right? And so I jumped into that for that reason.
Right.
Because it was not an easy decision because it meant taking my family name and associating it with cannabis
right.
in a very, very public way. Right,
and what were some of the like, what are the pluses and minuses of that? Right, you know, just if you can dive into that. A little bit.
Absolutely. So the pluses are, you know, living my conscience. You know, seeing that there really is a way to ensure that all the world's people are adequately nourished, and that we as humans live life sustainably on the planet, and knowing that that's achievable, and that I can help to. You know, do my part to see to it that actually happens. It was unconscionable for me to not take, you know, big, bold steps in that direction.
Sure.
Cannabis, it does two things. Number one, it's going to be immensely profitable as a sector, as an industry. So there was tremendous profit potential there. But it also gives me and others a platform. Excuse me, to communicate.
It's like a bee just flew across your mustache area. It's like, did a mosquito go in his mouth? What happened?
Oh, my goodness. But it gives me and others a platform to talk about these global transformational issues and how they're all interconnected.
Right.
And how it's great to go after one at a time, but there's also a much bigger picture that we can go after transforming all the world's global transformational issues in right. one holistic process.
So that's the side that makes you the hero, right? As far as like the pros and cons, right?
No. The heroism is not the heroism is not a pro.
Well, to your family, like, you know, I would think like you being a pioneer with this goal, and it's not tied to just money, right? It's not tied to like, ooh, I'm going to jump on this bandwagon because I see a business opportunity.
Yeah.
It was something that was deeply connected to things that you care about.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But the downside being?
The downside being that, you know, my name is associated with cannabis. My family name is associated with cannabis. There are risks of being assassinated. You know, President Vicente Fox, when we did our big press conference on May 30th of last year.
I saw that.
At one point, he puts his arm around me and says, I'm very happy to have Jamin Shively sitting next to me instead of El Chapo Guzman. And I'm thinking, wow. Holy shit, you know?
Right.
I mean, please don't do that, right?
Yes.
You know, and then a couple months later, we hold this big three-day symposium in Mexico, right?
Yes.
I led a 10-person delegation from the United States.
Yeah, I've heard you speak on that one, yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, I seriously, you know, I have concerns. I have to be careful, right, in terms of safety.
Right.
Because, you know, there are big, big kind of, you know, sinister forces at work in this industry, right?
That makes sense. That makes total sense. Well, good luck.
Thank you.
That was Jamin Shively, ladies and gentlemen. No, so why would, you know, I guess it seems like a big leap or, you know, or a complete change in direction, right, going from Microsoft mm-hmm. to this industry.
Yeah.
Were there other vehicles that you considered in order to solve a lot of these world problems?
Yeah.
Was there another route you would have gone, and how did this become the one?
Yeah, yeah. So great questions, Chris. Keep them coming. I considered simply taking the story of the model, the computer model that I was developing, which would be used to to create optimal scenarios or optimal futures for the planet, and just telling the story of that model. Hey, here's this cool model. Check it out, right? But it seemed like a bit of an uphill battle. But with cannabis, it's just such an electrifying topic. Everyone is so interested in it. And you know, there's not a lot of people who are kind of like ambivalent about it. Either they think it should be illegal or their mind is open and it's like, wait a second, now I'm exploring it. I used to think, you know, I talk about the twin myths of prohibition. Cannabis is illegal, therefore it must be bad.
Right.
And if it's bad, well, of course it should be illegal. Right. And a lot of people, I was, you know, brought up in that cyclic logic. And so given that it's such a hot topic and the transformation of prohibition is happening so quickly, sometimes it feels slowly to people who've been working hard at it day in, day out.
Exactly.
But, you know, if you really take a step back and look at the past few years, it's been accelerating exponentially.
Those floodgates have just, like, opened.
All over the place. Exactly. And, you know, look at Congressman Dana Rohrabacher's bill that he passed. In the House of Representatives, getting, you know, Republicans and Democrats to come together.
What was that bill? Just for the audience.
Yeah. So it's states' rights.
And for me, I pass it off on the audience because I.
Sure. So it's the Rohrabacher-Farr bill, and it what it does is it accomplishes that the federal government cannot interfere with the individual states as to how the states want to what they want to do with cannabis. And so things are accelerating so quickly that I realized this is a perfect opportunity to jump on one of the global transformational issues.
Sure.
Of the, you know, 6 to 10 different hot issues and create a platform where I have a huge, you know, audience watching, listening, right? Looking at these, you know, wow, these big, bold moves that sound crazy, and aren't you afraid that you're going to get thrown in jail, or aren't you going to afraid of this?
Living along those lines, a question that's in my head right now is like, just on a personal level, where did you learn to dream this big, right? Most people are like, grocery store.
Chris, I love your questions, and I love this program. Dude, I don't want to leave here. Let's keep going.
Let's make it a marathon.
Let's make it. Do you have time?
No, but do you have time, Anthony? You can.
Really, let's do this, because you asked a great question. The number one source of inspiration for me has always been my father, John Shively, who's a brilliant mechanical engineer. But in addition to just doing his, you know, brilliant mechanical engineering work, his, you know, day job, he would take a look at what was going on in the San Francisco Bay Area. And he would say, wow, all right. They want to put, we lived in a small town called Albany, just north of Berkeley, okay. on the East Bay. And a company wanted to put in I probably should be careful what I say about this, but they wanted to put in a gambling casino on the East Bay. Mm. And my dad was very, very concerned that a lot of poor people, right, because gambling is a terrible addiction. Talk about addiction. It's going to be a terrible addiction. So my dad was very concerned about poor people taking money that they should be using to buy food for their kids and going and trying to triple it at the casino and coming back with nothing, right?
Right.
But a hangover, right? And so
that's where my idea for hamburgers at the blackjack table comes in. $5 bet, you get a burger, and then
you get full, and you walk away.
You walk away with
brilliant,
no money.
Brilliant, no good.
But you're full.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so my dad took that on, right, and he became very, very unpopular at first. He was the only person of influence who was standing up and saying, "Hey, this is bad. We shouldn't do it." And then over time, he built up a whole movement.
Wow.
And at one point, the mob sent a guy to try to kill my dad.
Wow.
Yeah.
And did he foresee that cut? Like, you know.
No.
Okay.
Uh-uh. And anyway, my dad's a Korean War veteran, very, very strong guy.
I'm sure he wasn't having it.
So he put return to sender on the hitman and sent him back as damaged goods.
All right. This is a great interview. Fast forward to where you are now.
Yeah.
You mentioned ECO earlier.
Yeah.
It is an acronym of sorts, right?
Yeah.
ICCCO.
Exactly. ICCCO. And you got to go to eco.org to see the logo. It's beautiful because the C's are concentric, so it looks like ICO. And it stands for the International Coalition of Cannabis Companies and Organizations. And, Chris, we have a fascinating opportunity here. Now, when I say we, I mean the big we, right?
Oh, I mean you and I. I was like, sign me up.
You are signed up because this is a really super cool interview, and I hope a lot of people listen to it because we're getting into some serious—
Oh, they'll listen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, and pass it on because this is a really fascinating topic. So of all the industries in the world, right, all of which need to be transformed, some more than others, because we need to transform the global economy and life as we know it on Earth to change the goals from being, you know, personal freedom to accumulate wealth and do whatever you want and, you know, have all kinds of fun at the expense of the planet, to a world where our number one priority is that everyone in the world is adequately nourished, which is just so within our means. It really just takes us making a decision collectively as a world that we're going to make this a top priority and not compromise on that. And then also there is very much at hand the opportunity to once food security is established, right? And natural resources are being managed responsibly, and there's a lot of mechanisms to achieve that, then suddenly the incentives for war are tremendously diminished, right? So the best way to prevent war is not through, you know, threatening other people, but simply remove the incentives for people to go to war in the first place, right? We have the technology, we have the know-how, we have the benefit of history. We're pretty smart creatures, we human beings. And when we put our heads together, we can accomplish amazing things.
But we're also really greedy.
We are.
You know? And so when you look at the idea of sort of like this utopian future.
Yeah.
Two questions. One, how long of a process do you envision this, right? You as a big dreamer.
Yeah.
And then two, I feel like there's always going to be some sort of opposition.
Oh, sure, right? sure. You know, it's funny. I was having an amazing conversation with Congressman Dana Rohrabacher about this recently. And we were kicking around an idea of to show just how viable this future is of, you know, of a life on planet Earth, which is sustainable and where everyone is nourished.
Right.
And there is, you know, minimal conflict, right? You know, yeah, little two-year-olds might still squabble over a toy.
Yes.
Right. But you know, we're not going to be bombing each other, right, and flying planes into buildings and whatnot. So what sounds like utopia is so imminently achievable. So basically what we're talking about doing is the transformation of the perception of the cannabis industry, which is rapidly transforming from this taboo of, you know, it's the domain of drug cartels and, you know, unwashed hippies with machine guns up in the hills of far northern California.
Right.
You know,
I've seen those films.
right. So you know, that was the perception, and now it's rapidly transforming thanks to all this PR that's being done.
Right.
And I've had the privilege of playing a role in that. With that, and with the transformation of perception at a global scale that we're achieving with the cannabis industry and how cannabis is perceived, we need to engage in a much larger, more comprehensive process to transform the perception of hunger.
Right.
Right now it's perceived as, oh, that's just a very unfortunate thing. It's really too bad that it happens.
Right.
But, you know, if they just went and would just get a job. Right. Or, oh, well, you know, they have too many children and so it's their own fault. And so they kind of naturally have to die off. And then the population.
Oversimplification on behalf of the
tremendous oversimplification. Yeah. And also, I mean, just as human beings, you know, when we were little kids, when we're born into the world with just an open, loving heart and an open mind, if we'd see that someone else is suffering, well, you help them. Right. You don't just sit back and let them suffer. And so I think at some point, all of us growing up as little kids, at some point, some part of us died when we came to embrace this idea that it's okay to just let those tens of millions of people starve to death every year.
Right.
Some part of us died. And it's that part that I want to come back to life for all of us. And I believe it's immediately at hand. It's imminently at hand.
Right.
And Chris, you're doing your part in helping to spread the message.
I do what I can.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
It's funny, you know, when you think about like how desensitized we become or behaviors that we learn. So I get it when you say that. There's an entire ecosystem, no pun intended.
Yeah, exactly. No.
Or pun is intended.
Pun is intended, absolutely.
No, there's an ecosystem of behavioral / societal and emotional change.
Yeah, exactly.
So what's step one?
So step number one is the launching and development of ECO and a global conversation about cannabis and about building the operating system for the global cannabis industry. What is an operating system for an industry? What does that look like? Well, it consists of...
Says the Microsoft guy.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, everybody knows what an operating system for a computer is, or most people do. But an operating system for an industry, it's actually a concept I came up with. I Googled it. No one else had been talking about an operating system for an industry. But I thought, look, with cannabis, we're starting with a clean slate. For the first time in memory, right? Probably the last time was the development of, you know, the computer and microelectronics industries and whatnot, you know, in the Silicon Valley and other places where, you know, whole new categories are popping up like popcorn. A whole new industry is being created. Not since then have we seen such a massive scale industry either grow from nothing or, in this case, get transformed from black market to fully legitimate, legal. And so we have an opportunity to create a foundation for the industry,
right?
Unlike we would have for any other industry on the planet. Because we're starting from a clean slate. So let's talk about the components of that operating system. We're talking about the laws of the industry, right? Think about like the model penal code. It's actually a fascinating story. You can, you know, look it up for those who want to get deep into it. But in the 1920s, a bunch of smart lawyers got together and said, hey, look, every single country, every single state is kind of rolling their own as far as criminal law.
Right.
Why don't we create like a standard text, right, of the model penal code? No one asked them to do it. No government, you know, commissioned them to do it or gave them the okay, and they didn't ask anyone's permission.
Right.
They just sat down and did it. Right. So
love that, because that's kind of like what innovation is, right?
Exactly.
Like you see a problem that people don't even know exists yet, right? Not even a problem, an opportunity.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And so they just sat down and did it, and they came up with the model penal code. Well, we, the big we, right? All the different folks who are contributing to this effort are creating the model cannabis code, and alongside that, getting the rubber to hit the road, the model rules and regulations for government.
Brilliant.
Okay. And the standards for the industry, scientific standards, industrial standards, safety standards, medical standards, right?
Right.
The full gamut. But we create the foundation for the industry with specific goals in mind. What are those goals? Well, what's most important? What's most important? Let's get back to basics. That everyone on the planet be adequately nourished.
Right.
That there be peace at the international level, the national level, the local level, all the way down to the neighborhood level. Okay? These are the goals.
No, that's awesome.
Okay? Look, what we have right now, the operating system that we have for the global cannabis industry currently,
right,
how does it work? If you use cannabis, we're going to handcuff you, we're going to arrest you. We're gonna, you know, I'm oversimplifying,
yes,
right? Obviously, it depends on the country and the state.
I've been on all sides of that conversation.
Yeah.
No.
Exactly. So, you know, so governments are violating their own people. They're imparting violence on their own people. That's part of the current operating system.
Right.
And in certain countries around the world, those who traffic in the substance, if you compete with me and you overstep my territory, I'll chop off your head and the heads of everyone in your village.
Right.
And if you're passing through my turf and you're a teenager trying to flee from war-torn Central America up to the promised land, I can kidnap you and use you as a soldier. These are the rules that the industry is playing by today, right? So obviously all that's rapidly becoming obsolete thanks to the bravery of President Vicente Fox, who I did four events with last summer. We can talk about that. But bringing it back to the steps that we need to take, right? So step number one is building this platform, building out the components, and talking about them, bringing together experts,
sure,
right? Government leaders, policy experts, scientists, engineers, industry participants, and hashing out, if you will, all the, you know, fundamental elements, the fundamental pillars of what this is going to be, right? For what objectives? For all the objectives that we're talking about. So I was talking about hunger, talking about peace.
Yep.
And in terms of, I mean, the current operating system does is just negative, terrible on all those fronts.
Well, you made a good analogy last time we spoke, and you know, and it's exactly what you're talking about. Is I think you it was comparing it to a parade. I don't want to botch it, but I want to let you say it.
Sure. Yeah. So here it is. The best way to lead a parade is to find a parade and walk in front of it. Now, in the case of cannabis, you've got all these millions, billions, you know, probably in the billions of people, people around the world who basically say, why the heck is this stuff still illegal, right? It should be legal. It should be legalized and regulated and controlled in a responsible way, keep it away from kids, all this stuff. I mean, you know, 99% of, you know, rational,
right,
you know, informed people who really are informed on the facts.
Anthony, are you a smoker, by the way, or a participant? An indulgent.
I'm against it, though.
Mm-hmm. It's not my thing. Okay, I'm just watching you. You are soaking this all in, though. You will be converted by the time this is over.
Sounds good. Let's do it.
World peace. That's what we're talking about.
Absolutely. No. And so if we make those our goals, we can build a foundation, right, for an industry which supports all of these goals at a global level. And end up with an industry which promotes peace as opposed to promoting war and promoting violence, et cetera, et cetera.
An important step I see along the way, if I can, you know, forecast.
Yeah.
Cannabis, I'll use your jargon, is not the only illegal substance that people are fighting and warring over and has caused, you know, some of the woes that you've described.
Yeah.
At what step, and you know, or just how do you tackle that part of it?
Mm. Yeah. You know, I frankly don't have an answer for other substances simply because I haven't delved into it deeply enough to even form an educated opinion.
Right.
It's a fascinating question.
No, I think what if anything, it you know, you, like you said, you start to set a precedent, like you write the manual.
Yeah.
And you have maybe you have a variation for those other verticals, right? Like
Heroin
is going to exist.
Yes.
It's like maybe the means by which we handle it become different.
Exactly.
You know, be based on the parade that you're leading.
Exactly. And this underscores the importance of doing the first one as best as we possibly can, right? And putting all of our heads together to come up with the best possible operating system for the global cannabis and hemp industries.
Right.
So ECO is the place where we're having the conversations on this topic, this conversation included. And so once we have mastered the cannabis and hemp industries from the standpoint of the operating system, right, operating efficiently in an environmentally sustainable way, for example, you'll have a lot more greenhouse growing of cannabis than indoor grow.
Right.
Why? Because indoor grow is not environmentally sustainable. You've got the sun. You've got natural sunlight.
Right.
Right. And as well as outdoor. So a combination of outdoor, greenhouse, some indoor grow will probably be defensible because of certain, you know, special needs to grow certain specific varieties in certain ways, but the majority of the grow should be done in environmentally sustainable ways. But to ensure that, we need to build those values and those goals in at the very foundation of the industry.
Right.
So once we've done that for cannabis, like you suggest, we can go after other verticals, but we can then take that same technology of building an operating system for a given industry and applying that to other industries. And that's one of the vectors by which we'll affect the transformation of the world's economy.
Right.
Right.
How long of a timeline is this, right? Like, how long before you say, hey, we are, like, obviously the initial step of getting the talks and the people together and kind of vocalizing it, are we looking at 1 year, 10 years, you know, like, where do you see where you actually start – where I at home with, you know, my 9-year-old daughter can kind of feel the effects of ECO and Jamie Shipley.
Sure. So it's interesting. I would look at it in sort of an exponential paradigm. And so, for example, if you look at the percentage of Americans who favor legalization, it took a huge leap in the 12-month period ending in the fall last year. It was just, it went from, you know, hovering right around 50% to boom, you
right.
know, close to 60% in favor.
Yep.
And it's, if you look at the graph, it's just Google, you know, Gallup poll marijuana, right? It's the top link. Click on the graph, and you'll see that it mirrors an exponential, you know, function.
Sure.
And so these phenomena are exponential. And so people's understanding that there is a way to transform an industry in such a way that you have a very substantial impact on things that all people care about or that all people want to care about,
right?
Such as making sure that their brothers and sisters, their fellow human beings, are okay, that they're adequately nourished, that they've got a roof over their heads, right? And that people aren't fighting each other.
So as president, I see on your business card, of ECO, or just as a CEO or a leader of an organization, this is a little step back in a little bit more philosophical direction, but how do you go about getting people to see and actualize your vision?
Yeah.
Right? Because whether it's Puffy or, you know, some other big, you know, comes in here with like, oh, this is what we're going to do. And you're excited about it. But at some point, me or Anthony, we need marching orders, right?
Like, absolutely.
So how do you go from big vision to actualizing it and communicating that vision to people that you need to support you and work for you?
Perfect. So we use the amazing technologies of the internet and social media so that it becomes a viral conversation, right? It becomes something where a person who still here's a goal that a year from today, right? What's today? June 24th. Okay, let's establish that as a goal that by June 24th of 2015, over 70% of Americans. From children to adults to seniors, over 70% of Americans believe that it is absolutely preposterous that people are still starving in such large numbers today or in any numbers.
Right.
And that is completely solvable, right, a year from now.
Sure.
That's going to be a challenge. It's going to be a communication challenge. And, in fact, one of the things I was brainstorming with Congressman Rohrabacher that I was mentioning is we were brainstorming what if we were to create a movie, like a sci-fi movie. It sort of spanned reality and sci-fi. And it would start with present-day conditions in 2014 and then go into the future, right, and paint a picture of a set of technologies, a set of policies, right, a set of organizations such as ECO,
sure,
a set of heroes such as Elon Musk, the head of Tesla, who's doing all these amazing...
He's doing amazing work.
Oh, my goodness. I had dinner... Had dinner with him last night, and he delivered an amazing speech, and it was just phenomenal, his perspectives.
That's awesome.
On things. So folks like that, people who really exist in real life, will be cast into this sci-fi film. You are now a character in the sci-fi film.
Yes.
Right? Seriously.
I don't want to die, by the way. Just
no, you won't die. You won't die. Reminds me of like the good, the bad, the ugly. Don't die, Blondie. So no, don't die. No, you won't die.
All right, good.
Yeah. So because I need you, we need you, the world needs you to communicate this message that, look, we don't have all the answers. We don't have a solution. By the way, did you watch that 15-minute video I sent to you?
Yes,
awesome.
I did.
Yeah. Can we post that on the site?
Well,
here?
Yes, it'll definitely be a link to the video.
Perfect.
So guys, scroll down. If you're listening.
No, what do you mean if they're listening? Everyone's listening.
As you are listening, scroll down, but don't depart don't leave until the interview's over.
Yeah, don't
then
leave.
Go watch the video.
Then go watch the video, yeah. And anyway, it's the holistic global
solution. Gotta be real specific with these people.
Absolutely. Yeah. No. So that's the holistic global solution video. And you'll see a mathematical model, a computer model.
Sure.
Or the concept of it, for how to actually go about transforming all of these global issues simultaneously. Right, in one unified process, that needs to become a meme. But before that becomes a meme, the cannabis, the fact that we're creating the operating system for the global cannabis industry, needs to become a meme. Now, this is a fascinating thing. This whole notion of an operating system for any industry really didn't exist until now.
Right.
Until now that you're, you know, 100,000 brilliant, amazing listeners. You guys rock! Woo, woo!
I need to come up with a name for them. Crushers or something.
Crushers. Yeah, yeah, Crushers.
Do you like Crushers?
I love Crushers. Well, here's the thing. We're I want something more positive than Crushers.
Well,
right?
Crush is like you either have a, like you have a crush on something that's
there
innovative.
Go. There you go.
Or you're crushing it. Like you're doing a bang-up job at whatever it is you're doing.
Totally. Totally. So Crushers of the world, unite. Right? No, seriously. But this meme, right?
Right.
That there can be an operating system for an industry. Didn't exist until right now, until the Crushers heard it, right?
Yes.
Philosophical point. Didn't exist until they heard it. Now that they've heard it, they can spread it. And then the thing is, well, what does it look like? What's an example of this? Well, go to eco.org. Well, what's ECO? Well, it's the you know, Global Trade Association for the International Cannabis Industry and right. Hemp Industry. It's a multi-hundred-billion-dollar industry, which is growing.
You mentioned some pretty powerful names, Senator, President,
yeah.
Elon Musk. Who are other supporters that are sort of like, who's on your team, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, right now we know Jamin Shively. You know, you Google that name, it's you, and it's a picture of you, and there's a Huffington Post article. But what does your personal professional sphere look like?
So let me ask you.
I feel like it's a hip hop album. Who you got producing on your album?
Right. So we got Chris Denson. Right. Seriously. Yes. No. And you're
I'm here.
And you're a powerful force, right, in this conversation. Yes. So former Mexican President Vicente Fox. We've got a bunch of local leaders from the state of Washington, government, non-government. For example, John Davis, who's one of the top folks at HempFest, and he co-founded the Coalition for Cannabis Standards and Ethics in Washington State. He's a board member of the National Cannabis Industry Association,
awesome.
Et cetera, et cetera. So we've got people with incredible credentials. We've got one of the top cancer surgeons in the country. We've got the former, one of the top, civilian positions in government, wow. spanning FDA, USDA, et cetera, heads of universities, academics, legal experts, engineers. But what's here's the fascinating thing, Chris. As this conversation evolves, there is never a single, single unified vision of exactly what's possible, because we keep going beyond.
Right.
Right. It was only a couple weeks ago I was talking with Congressman Rohrabacher, and we're brainstorming about this reality / sci-fi.
Well, sounds amazing, by the way.
Doesn't it? Dude, no, listen to this, Chris.
I'm telling you.
No, no, dude, listen to this. Do you remember, how old are you?
If
you
don't...
No, I'm sorry. Okay, so let's edit that out.
Look, I'm a couple years younger than you, probably.
Probably more than
a couple. I don't mean that as a competitive insult or anything.
No. Probably more than a couple. So look, when you watch Star Wars, you come out of Star Wars for the first time as a kid, it's like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that rocked my world. It's like my definition of cool has been transformed, right? This is just like a new kind of cool. Because it's not just cool, like, ooh, isn't that shiny and isn't that whatever. It's like it speaks right to the heart and soul.
Right.
You know, values and, you know, unity and working together and taking on a giant challenge that almost seems insurmountable, right?
Yep.
Now, take that same passion and excitement, take it out of the realm of fantasy, and put it into the realm of reality, so that when you walk out of the film, there are immediate actions that you can take right now this afternoon or this evening,
right?
And say, wow, I can join the social network, right? I can join this discussion forum. I can join the conversation that is creating and evolving this, whatever it is, right? This transformation of life on Earth as we know
it. So the film is kind of like one gear in the machine. Right?
Exactly.
But it's a very important gear.
An extremely important gear, because that's the kind of thing where essentially overnight you can take the world from not knowing to knowing.
Right.
And from not participating to actively participating.
So let me ask you this. That's a brilliant vision. And then when you look at kind of like your team, or your, the people that you've gotten on board.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to build that sort of Rolodex, right? Because here you are, ex-Microsoft, and God knows whatever else you did before then.
Yeah.
Totally entering this blindly, to some extent, I would imagine.
Yeah.
And then, like, how do you go into, take a left turn from your career and then, like, have dinner with Elon Musk a couple years later?
Well, here, let me give you an example. So, I met President Vicente Fox in 2001. At the time, I was running Shively International in the United States and Mexico. We were building and operating educational computer centers, thank you, and for-profit cyber cafes on the west coast of Mexico. And President Fox, phenomenally popular president of one of the largest countries in the world,
right,
made his first official visit to the state of Sinaloa, Mexico, to inaugurate Shively International's 25th Educational Computer Center.
Wow.
So that's how I got to know him. But, of course, if you asked me about cannabis at the time, I'd either say, I don't know, or, yeah, I guess it should be illegal because it's bad. You know, Nancy Reagan said,
shut up and open a school.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, so then, you know, 12 years later, I call him up. Or I, you know, try to get through to him, but I get through to his secretary. He's in a meeting, and I say, look, this is really, really important. We're going to do this press conference announcing that we're acquiring this this company,
right,
up in the state of Washington, building the first national brand,
sure,
of cannabis. And this has very important implications for Mexico because, you know, maybe somewhere around half of the drug cartel revenue comes from cannabis, right? And so on like 2 days' notice, he flew up and we did an amazing press conference. You can just go to YouTube and just type in Jamin Shively,
yeah,
you know, Fox, whatever. And it just rocked the world because President, here's this bold, courageous leader who's not afraid of dying, whose country has gone from a prosperous, successful, peaceful country at the beginning of his tenure to essentially being a failed state.
Right.
And it's an utter tragedy. And so for the first time, you've got the leader of a major country coming to the United States and directly appealing to the United States government to repeal prohibition.
So I guess it's probably a domino effect from there. Like,
absolutely.
Everybody else just kind of is like, oh.
No, it is a domino effect because then Congressman, listen to this. So one of the things I said in my speech was I said the Berlin Wall of prohibition of cannabis is weak and it is crumbling as we speak. Well, check this out. Congressman Dana Rohrabacher years ago was a speechwriter for Ronald Reagan, and he was the one who personally appealed to the Gipper.
I love the face. Yeah, I wish I had a picture of you doing the Gipper face.
He personally appealed to the Gipper to make the speech, Gorbachev, tear down this wall. So when he heard me make my speech, he said, high five, get that guy on the phone. And this was like 2 days before the big three-day symposium that President,
right,
Vicente Fox and I were holding in Mexico that I mentioned earlier. And where I've got this other just, you know, long list of, I mean, I ended up oversubscribed with 12 delegates coming down. Because, you know, to get 10 people to come to Mexico for 3 days.
50.
Exactly. And so I overshot. But the fact that I was able to overshoot itself was because my network was growing so quickly. I mean, because we did this on like 6 weeks' notice. President Fox and I organized. I mean, for him to pick up the phone and get somebody to come, that's a bit, you know, he's got a little bit more pull than I do, shall we say. Anyway, so it was, and so I asked Congressman Rohrabacher if I could fly him down, you know, send a private jet and take him down because it was like on a couple days' notice and he's in Washington, D.C. Well, no, according to the congressional rules, we can't do that. But he did present at the symposium virtually, right, through video conference.
Right.
And so that's how I got to know him. And then over time, we, you know, just talk about more and more topics. And now we're talking about this amazing sci-fi concept. I mean, it's just
so
amazing.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to switch gears a little bit for a second. Just a little bit more of a systemic question, right, where you do have this big vision. And then as you go out, I'm sure, like you said, once the dominoes start falling,
yeah,
opportunities are abound. Like you can do,
yeah,
this thing, you can do that thing. How do you kind of stay focused? Like what was your strategy to focus on the, you know, that one thing that's going to really make this work and then everything else is kind of an add-on or you know, a value add of some sort.
So you mean like the focus of starting with cannabis and focusing on that initially, or can you tell
me?
Well,
yeah, I think, you know, because we get a lot of entrepreneurs that listen, executives and so on and so forth. So when we look at like the startup environment,
yeah,
right, and when,
yeah,
they're focused on developing,
yeah,
their product versus marketing versus branding versus partnerships.
I've got just the answer for you. Okay, so check this out. There is a tension between two things. One is focus. The other is what I'll call dimensional enhancement. Okay? So when I invited President Fox to come and, you know, join me and others in this big press conference we were going to do, And actually, when we were talking about doing the press conference in the first place, there were those who said, "Wait a second, what do you, we're not a PR company, you know, we're starting a retail, we're sure. creating the premium brand of cannabis." And my point was, look, we've taken the message of we're building a cannabis brand far enough. Now it's time to do a dimensional enhancement, like from two dimensions to three dimensions.
Sure.
The dimensional enhancement being, let's get into the realm of politics and policy, right? And the international dimension and the drug war,
right?
And let's get the world's attention. Let's get the world focused on this topic. And one can say, oh, well, that detracts from business. Actually, to the contrary, that more than anything else, those events with former Mexican President Vicente Fox were what, you know, catapulted us to the number one most I asked a friend of mine, hey, who do you think is the number two brand right now? And he said, Jamin, there does not even exist the notion that there is a number two.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's how powerful it was. So, and here's the fascinating thing. So we built the number one brand of cannabis without selling a single gram of cannabis. Right?
It's amazing, yeah.
It's more than amazing. It's actually magic, right? It really is magic. And we're applying that same magic to now all of the world's global transformational issues.
Sure.
And we're starting with eco as the first domino, to use your analogy, right?
Yep.
But over time, what I want for the future, in the future, is to change one of the words in that acronym, eco, going from the International Coalition of Cannabis Companies and Organizations to then broaden it to the International Coalition of Compassionate Companies and Organizations. And with what we're going to do is we're going to turn Compassionate into the number one lifestyle brand in the world. Compassionate, because who does not want compassion, right?
That's true.
Now,
Anthony, do you want some compassion?
Sure.
You'll take
Anthony,
some.
Shut up. We're trying to have a. You're just like butting in. You're supposed to like nod and anyway.
Thumbs up.
I'm sorry. See, I'm being dramatic.
Well, you know, funny, he hasn't like the last 5, 6, 7, 8 shows I've recorded. He hasn't been here, so I'm overdue with my
Anthony. We're
my
trying
side
to talk
dialogue.
About compassion here, okay? Would you just like
tone it down a little bit?
Tone it down a bit. No, that's an example of
that's a perfect example of compassion
of anti-compassion. Right?
Exactly.
And we just have far too much of that. It's competition, right? Being afraid that someone's going to steal my thunder,
yes.
Right?
That also gets in, not to derail too far, but like that also gets into the abundance mentality.
Absolutely.
Like there is enough to go around.
Absolutely.
You know? So,
absolutely.
So the show is called Innovation Crush. What out there in the world do you see, the sort of outside your own purview, which is a word I hate. I hate the word purview.
Right?
It always like creeps into weird conversation. I'm like, why did I say that? well, what's something out there that you see that you are kind of crushing on yourself, whether it's a technology piece or something in the entertainment industry or just, you know, maybe even something in your own.
So here's one where we're crushing on it. And in a way it's a dimensional enhancement. Just like the sci-fi film is a dimensional enhancement.
Right.
So because that's one thing. Because, you know, in a week you can transform the world with an amazing film.
Right.
With a blockbuster film.
That's
right?
True.
And where better to be having this conversation than right here.
I 100% agree with that.
Yeah. So, dude.
Here we go. Fist bump.
The world is changing as we speak.
You get a fist bump too. There you go.
So check this out. Another dimensional enhancement is the following. Look, it would take, I don't know, $100 million and, you know, 3.5 years to produce this amazing sci-fi film, right? In the meantime, how many tens of millions or hundreds of millions of people are going to starve to death, right? So imagine this. The dimensional enhancement is bring it back to present day and instantiate it now, to use another software term, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the way to do that is to kick off this whole process as a documentary television series
of the making
of the film and of this entire process.
I think like three people's heads just exploded.
I'm serious. And so I'm about to invite in, I didn't tell you about this in advance, Chris, but I'm about to invite in the documentary television crew.
Nice.
I'm just kidding. But that's see, but here's the thing.
I made a look.
No, really. It made you both look. Because yes. And that's the thing. That's the beautiful thing about the dimensional enhancement and using the magic of PR and marketing. You first generate the idea, right? How did we build the number one brand of cannabis in the world without selling one single gram of cannabis? It's not first to market, it's first to mind.
Right.
Read the 22 Immutable Laws of Marketing by Rise and Trout. Rewind it, and I'll say it again. The 22 Immutable Laws of Marketing. It is a must read, and it's remarkable how few people have read it. I mean, I would give out copies of that at Microsoft like popcorn.
Yeah.
And say, you've got to read this.
No, I think also is, you know, you identified with a culture and presented a brand promise that resonated with them, and at least a whole set, like, I don't know, it's kind of like when somebody shows you a possibility, right?
Exactly,
like you align with the possibility,
and that's at the moment of creation. Once you see that possibility, like you said, I think three people's heads just exploded.
Exactly.
Right, when that's the moment when it becomes real in your mind, and when it's real in your mind, it's real.
Yes.
And when it's real in the minds of a billion people,
it's very, very real.
It's very, very, very real.
Complete this phrase for me.
Yes.
Innovation to me is?
Innovation to me is, it's a combination, and a highly nonlinear combination of the following elements. Dimensional enhancement, courage, risk-taking, respecting and at the same time transforming your fear or your relationship to fear of being wrong, right? Because for a big dimensional enhancement or for two in a row, right?
Right.
I mean, I could just as easily become the laughingstock of the world as I could be the one who leads the creation of this amazing documentary television series and the sci-fi movie and the operating system for the global cannabis industry,
yep.
The operating system for the global oil and petrochemical industries, the operating system for the global food industries,
yes.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, it's not being afraid of the unknown, because at the end of the day, you don't know the answer or the outcome. You know the effort, and it's founded in some science and some, you know, general knowledge and a gut feeling and experience.
Yeah.
And it may, like, you know, I'm sure there's no doubt in your mind as far as, like, its potential to be successful. And I think, a lot of us start to question steps 12 before we take step one.
No, exactly. And also, it's like, you know, we'll be in the middle of talking about something and then I'll go off on a different tangent, right? It's the willingness to go off on tangents.
Yes.
Right? And veer outside the lines and clear off the paper and onto the floor. And you're playing like a kid again,
yep.
Right? And experimenting with concepts and laughing and just...
Or Russell Crowe in A Beautiful Mind when it's just got like mathematical formulas all over the wall.
Yeah, exactly. And the beautiful thing is, Chris, this happens when we're in conversation, right? It's happening with the three of us right now, and it's happening in a very, you know, metaphysical sense with all of the crushers out there.
Go all crushers. The crushers.
Exactly.
You like crushers? I like it too. I'm keeping it.
And another kind of like amazing... thing that I'm cultivating is the ability to look back from the future, right? And so project into the future and say, this is how the future looks.
Right.
Look back on the Jamin in 2014 and give him support, give him energy, give him strength.
What's the one bit of advice that the future Jamin would give to the present Jamin?
Keep going and don't hold back. Because, you know, sometimes I think, oh, I shouldn't say that. In fact, just this morning I was talking with my buddy, overlooking the beautiful ocean and, I don't know, what is it, Playa del Rey, where there's that big tall cliff and all that. Anyway, and he says, you know, you should, and I was telling him, hey, I'm gonna meet with Chris Denson and we're going to do this really cool show, right? And I said, I want to talk about this and this and this and this and this and this, right? And he said, you know, I really think you should keep it focused, because if you just go way too far out there and talk about all the world's, you know, problems and everything else, people aren't going to take you seriously.
Right.
Or it's just going to be too much for them. But see, that's part of dimensional enhancement. Like, the way I talk to kids, like, for example, if I have a cousin who has, like, a two-year-old, I don't talk to that two-year-old like a two-year-old. I talk to the two-year-old like a seven-year-old, right?
Yep.
Fully expecting and believing that he will come up to speed intellectually.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, it's just like, well, it's just like I have a 1.5-year-old, and I had like a milestone of a weekend where I was like, I had very conversational, you know, interaction with him.
Yeah.
And, you know, he understood. He sat down. He followed me. Like, you know, yeah. Most things you don't expect, like, almost 2-year-old to do. Like, they will take off as soon as you put them down, right? And I was like, hey, you know, follow me. Just like all these different things. But it wasn't like irate parent or like, oh, baby talk or just the things that you think you need to do to communicate with certain kids or just individuals in general. Like, a lot of times we try to become what we think the person across from us is in order to communicate, which there's a little bit of that that happens. But, like, you are almost good enough as you are. And you are awesome.
Thank you.
I do want to thank you for coming down today and like having this conversation with us. Where can people find you, find the movement, support you, et cetera, et cetera?
First of all, thank you, Chris. This has been absolutely amazing. I'm looking forward to more follow-up. But people can go to iccco.org, and that's 3 C's in a row. So it's ICCCO.org, eco.org.
Great. Anything else? Twitter handle, link, you do all that stuff?
All that'll be on.
Okay, it's all there.
Yeah.
My Twitter handle is at Densonology. Wow. Anthony, you follow me. So everybody, I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank my guest again, Jamin Shively, for joining us. This has been another installment of Innovation Crush, and we will talk to you next time.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.